Welcome back. You're watching StockWatch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Jean-Pierre Fister from Protea Capital Management and Rikas Kombrink from CapiCraft. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Well, with geopolitical tensions further fueling inflation and recession fears, Rupal Agarwal, who's a quantitative strategist at Bernstein Asia, says your defenses should be up.
Investors should be more positioned for a defensive position, stance, which could be played through either managing the overall portfolio volatility or looking at, say, the highest quality names in the market. But at the same time, still have some inflation sensitive assets in the portfolio mix, exposure to energy materials, but again, more selectively. So we would only play the value trade through these late cycle inflation sensitive assets rather than being completely into the cyclical mix.
Good evening, JP, and to you, Trikas. We've seen a, sort of a flight to safety for the past 2 weeks, meaning obviously big tech is, back to being the flavor of the day, and there's been, a short recovery. So I want to hear your thoughts on her comments, Trikas, where she says, defense is where you should be, your defenses should be up. Do you agree?
Yeah, well, firstly, I'm not sure if I would put tech into the defensive category. It was so, the last few years, especially during COVID. But in an inflationary environment, if there's geopolitical unrest,
yes,
and where the world is splitting into different, more, more regional trade ups, etc., and where you've got firewalls, internet firewalls going up, etc., I'm not sure if tech is that defensive. It might be actually, quite cyclical, and there might be structural headwinds for tech going forward if that is the world that we're moving into. So, I do think you need to be defensive. This rally that we're seeing at the moment, especially in certain tech-related sectors, etc., I've got no crystal ball, to be fair,
yeah,
but it just feels like a bear market rally, like a bear trap.
Yeah, I mean, JP, I think the stats from Y-Charts came out to say, the last time we saw two consecutive days of 2.5%, up on the S&P 500, where, four other times in the past there were very bullish signals, which meant, what we saw 2 weeks ago on that Thursday was actually a bullish signal. Do you agree with this as well? Or do you think maybe that's like too technical, you just want to focus on the fundamentals?
More the latter, but what I do find interesting, if I look at markets over the course of, say, the last few weeks, or 3 weeks,
yeah,
is there's quite a discrepancy between what equity markets are telling you and what fixed income markets are telling you. And what you have had is a recovery in equity markets,
yes,
a lot of tech shares bouncing hard,
mm-hmm,
but in fixed income markets, you've seen a sell-off in bonds, quite a steep sell-off. So normally, you don't have those two things at the same time. Normally, when equity markets do well, bonds don't do well, or vice versa. What you now had is, on the one hand, bonds selling off because of long-term rates, and equity is still with a lot of nervousness, also recovering. And it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen in terms of the fixed income market, which is telling you you should be more cautious, you should worry, because fixed income markets have sold off, versus equity markets that say you don't need to worry, everything is rosy. One of the two probably isn't correct. I don't know which one yet, but they can't both be correct.
Yeah.
I'll add two things to JP, Bright.
Yeah.
And that is firstly, is that retail inflows are still exceptionally strong.
Strong, yeah.
So, bear markets don't bottom on strong retail inflows.
Weird.
And secondly is that the breadth of the market recovery is quite weak. So you see a lot of the, let's call it the, there's a lot of sectors that's been sold off quite aggressively. Let's call it the profitless or the conceptual.
High beta.
High beta, tech side or whatever. you know, some of those have lost 50 to 80%, and some of those are bouncing hard. But if you look at the general economy stocks, your traditional economy stocks, they're not bouncing anymore. They're just staying flat. And that's a signal that you should be looking at.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the best performers year to date, if you look, you know, into categories, you're seeing that pocket of energy is up a lot. But the problem now, you're seeing that trade sort of reverse in the past 2 weeks. And like you're saying, high beta is coming back to being the flavor of the day. You're all confused here. And like, you know, JP is saying, the spread between the 5-year and the 10-year treasury bonds is indicating that maybe there's a recession coming, you know, to us. But again, what's happening in the stock market is not reflecting that. So we find ourselves where we are with this catch 22. So the first question is from Fatima. She's asking about Gold Fields. Trickers?
Yeah, I think Gold Fields is one of the better managed gold miners on the planet. And they've got good reserves, strong balance sheet. Remember, they had a fairly quite, you know, large rights issue not too long ago, about 2 years ago, with the build out of the Salar Norte mine in I think it's in Chile. It's a big project, so they're one of the few big gold miners that's actually aggressively expanding production. And optically it looks a bit more expensive than the others, but you know, there is production increases coming. The one thing that does concern me is the ability, and I think this not only goes for Gold Fields, I've seen it from a few, is the ability or inability from the last few reports to keep costs under control. So I think cash cost per ounce is going to go up. Cyanide to break down the gold in the process.
Yeah.
Inputs like that are just shooting through the roof.
Wow.
So I think they're going to struggle to keep costs down. So we do own miners, but one of our preferred entries is through royalty companies, so that we've got the upside on the revenue, but we have no downside on the cost, you know, on the overheads and the cost to production.
Okay, interesting. This one says, good evening. These three companies are newly listed. Is there any of them a good buy for the long term? So this is from Parida. It says the three companies is Quantum SI, Source Limited, and Lilium. I don't know any of those companies. JP?
Sure. No, I don't know them either. Lilium rings a bell. I think someone in the last week wrote a short report on Lilium, saying that one should watch out. From what I remember, they do a recovery of metals.
Yes.
And if you Google Lilium, you should see that short report. But I don't know anything about the other two companies.
Okay, then let's try this one. It's from Merley. I don't know if I'm saying that name correctly, but He's given us a host of companies here to look at, but I'll ask about Purple, and then I'll ask about Centova as well. So Purple Group, is anything you look at, JP?
Well, it has been a rocket stock, the closest we have in South Africa to a meme stock.
Yes.
Obviously, they own Easy Equities, which is growing very strongly and has democratized share ownership by allowing people to buy fractional shares and to pay low brokerage, which is great. As long as they buy and hold and not trade. But when I see the people on Twitter putting their accounts on, the Easy Equity snapshots of their accounts,
yes,
it does seem like they are buy and hold investors and not very active traders. So that's excellent. And as long as they do that, it means that Easy Equities is not making as much money from trading because they prefer activity, making brokerage. But over the long term, if your clients are actually increasing their wealth, like it seems a large part of the Easy Equity client base is, that's very good for your business long term. Now, it also means that a lot of people that use Easy Equities buy Purple shares themselves. That in itself puts positive pressure on the share price. But notwithstanding that, I think it's a company that is growing very strongly, doing very well. Share price might reflect a lot of optimism at the moment, but the company is doing very good things via Easy Equity.
Yes, we have 2 minutes here, Trickus. We've got a long question from Russell. It's about Baldwin, essentially. Are you bullish on Baldwin for the long term?
I haven't looked at it in a long time. I follow it with one eye. So take what I say with a pinch of salt. Obviously, you have to look in the accounting treatment and how they recognize profits. A lot of the profits that they recognize obviously mean that it's a developer, which means that you can't really write it by using a PE or something like that. You have to discount the current earnings. You have to use a future value of the current developments. So, and if you look at that, the company seems like it's trading at, last I checked, half of what its future developments are worth, even when you discount that at an appropriate discount rate. So it looks very cheap. The big risk here, I think, is that they get ahead of themselves. There's a lot of development risk here. There's a lot of credit risk, obviously. And the obvious risk with developers is that they run out of cash before, those developments actually bring in the funds to continue with the next ones.
Now, as Chinese tech stocks pose some risk, and with US tech giant Tesla seeking another stock split, New Age Alpha's Julian Kowski was asked to weigh in on big US tech names.
I like them. And the reason I like them is when you do the math, you take Amazon, you take Tesla, Tesla's got a... And Tesla's always been one of these companies that unfortunately suffers from a lot of this vague and ambiguous information. But the fact of the matter is that Tesla at its current price has only a 14% chance that it will fail to deliver the growth implied in that stock price. In other words, it has somewhere around an 86% chance, based on the math, that it will deliver the growth. So it really comes down to that, there's so many different metrics by which we judge these stocks, but we have a simple thing. Can the company deliver the growth implied in its stock price?
JP, can US big tech deliver on, from this big base that we've seen in the past 2 years? I mean, coming off of COVID, when they were seen as defensive stocks, as Dricus, implied.
Yes, it's a key question, not only because of the importance of the tech stocks in the indices, but because they've done so well for so long, it's a key question whether this will continue.
Yes.
Or whether the fundamentals might deteriorate. And then the second part of the question, which is also what was discussed, is what is discounted in share prices? And what I would say is there are companies like Tesla where a lot of ambition is being discounted in the share price, and they have delivered very ambitious targets in the past, and they need to keep on delivering those ambitious targets to justify the share price. Some of the other big companies like Apple aren't on as high a multiple, so they don't need to outperform as much as the likes of Tesla. Alphabet, I would say, similar to Apple. There are some high expectations, but not abnormally high. And then Amazon, you need to disaggregate between AWS and the retail business. And if you do that, the expectations for AWS are also not that over-ambitious.
Yeah.
So I think the different big tech stocks have got different expectations embedded in their share prices, and there's still some value in those ones that have reasonable expectations, while some others have too ambitious expectations embedded in their share prices, including the likes of Tesla, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the tagline on Bloomberg today was that, Apple is flat for the year, meaning, it's gone... the whole journey going down and now back, to near all-time highs. So it's quite interesting to see that. But obviously still got some way to go back to October's high. I want to hear you, Dricus, if you have anything to say, contra, obviously, to JP. I want you guys to fight now. Take off your gloves.
Yeah, I don't think there's a fight in there. I think I've got a concern with Tesla. There's a bit of a religious... following,
yes.
Of Tesla.
The cult line,
That's obviously, it's not a lot of rationality in this discussion. So that's the first concern, obviously you see from the meme stocks, etc. But from a fundamental perspective, there's something that the platinum and palladium sector is telling you. It's telling you there's less demand for auto catalysts coming. There's a problem in the auto sector at the moment. Logistics has obviously been a problem since the outbreak of COVID, but also neon gas, which is used in the semiconductor manufacturing, mostly comes from, Far East Europe, from Ukraine, a lot of it. And neon gas is needed, you know, I think about 40 or 50% of it comes from that area, and that's needed to construct semiconductors. Nickel and what's the other metal is needed, you know, for the solenoids and semiconductors. Draw up a price of nickel and tin, and see what that's doing. The price of semiconductors are going to go through the roof. The ability to manufacture them is a problem. All these new vehicles need a very high standard of, you know, semiconductors, a lot of semiconductor processing power in them. So the ability for auto manufacturers, especially, you know, smart ones like the ones Tesla are manufacturing, they are going to constrain them. And I seriously doubt if they're going to get to, you know, those production targets that they have. So I think from a fundamental perspective, the commodity market is telling you something, you know, which is influenced a lot by supply and demand, real yes. supply and demand,
yep.
while the equity market might be divorced from that reality.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, like you're saying, there's going to be, I don't know for how long the duration of the war is going to last or is going to be, but those rare earths, which, like you said, especially for semiconductor companies and obviously EV companies, you know, they need these as inputs to their products. And if that's not happening, you should be worried about the next couple of quarters coming up in terms of earnings, because there might be some misses there. Let's go back to our stocks here. This is Tabo who says, I'd like to know what the panel thinks of First Rand. The stock has rallied nicely and has a good PE and a good NAV as compared to its peers. JP?
Yes. All the banks have rallied very, very strongly from the post-COVID lows of just about 2 years ago. And typically, if one looks at how expensive or cheap a bank stock is, looking at a PE doesn't always tell you the full picture, because if you look at the income statement of a bank, you have something called pre-provision profit.
Yeah.
And then you have the big swing in the profitability, which is the provision for bad debts. And because of the unbelievable volatility that the provision and the change in provision brings into the income statement, it makes quite often a lot more sense to look at a price-to-book ratio for a bank. And if you do that, a lot of our banks went to below 1, even below 0.7 in terms of the price-to-book ratio during late 2020, early 2021. And most of them are now comfortably above 1, and the likes of First Rand, the last time I looked, I think it was closer to 2. And you can justify that ratio because the return on equity of First Rand is structurally higher than the other banks. So you can justify a higher price-to-book ratio. So even though there's been a very strong recovery in First Rand, I don't think the shares are significantly overvalued. They have recovered, I think, the cheap levels that they reached in the last 2 years. But it's a solid bank that should continue to grow its pre-provision profits, while the bad debt ratio might move a bit, but they are well provisioned. So I like First Rand shares, and I've liked them the last 2 years.
Okay, interesting. As compared to peers as well, obviously. This one is from the SMS line. Says, after an Impex trading update, what is the panel's view on this stock? So this is from Leo on the SMS line there. Drikus?
Didn't see it. Don't follow it. Sorry, boss.
You don't follow that one. Do you follow Potash? Potash. I don't know if I'm saying this right.
Potash?
Yes.
The potash that I invested in is now called Nutrien. Is there a different potash that the viewer is talking about?
So this is the one, apparently.
You had Potash Corporation, the one that BHP Billiton did a bid for back in 2008. That is now called Nutrien.
I have no clue. This is apparently listed in the ASX and the LSE. I think we're talking about the same.
Okay. No, it must be a mid-cap. No, I don't follow that one.
Okay.
But I am bullish on potash. You know, most fertilizers use the what they call the Haber process, where they manufacture nitrogen basically from gas, natural gas, and obviously natural gas prices and the ability to conduct the Haber process is seriously curtailed at the moment, and that means that fertilizer prices are just going parabolic. But potash manufacturers or miners, the miners, they don't have that problem. So that's why the likes of those would be doing much better it's somebody like Omnia, for instance, that has to buy feedstock, and they just basically a manufacturer, not the miner of the of you know NPKs.
Yeah, interesting observation there, because that was Shapiro's stock picks, I think, not so long ago, Omnia. We have another question here. Oh, wait, do you want to take the NAMPAC question? JP?
JP?
NAMPAC, yes. Sure. Look, I think on the one hand, let's say there's an income statement view and there's a balance sheet view. And according to the income statement view, it sounds like the profitability is up strongly, so that sounds very good. On the balance sheet view, it sounds like a lot of cash has gone into working capital, and they sort of, you know, put one sentence there, just reminding people that the debt is coming up for refinancing later this year. Yep. And then they sneak in the little sentence to say, well, they might sell assets, or they might refinance, or they might do a rights issue, just by the way. And I think that drew some attention, because they've already sold a lot of assets. I don't know how much more they can do in terms of the asset sale program. Yes, they can try to refinance, but then it means there's a reasonable possibility of a rights issue. So just be ready for that. But the new management team has done very well to stabilize the ship. NAMPAC shares are up very strongly over the last 2 years, so it's much better to do a rights issue at this price versus doing a rights issue of 2 years ago. That would have destroyed a lot of value.
Okay, even though you can see that today it's down like close to 7%, NAMPAC, you know, that's the market reacting to the numbers, I guess. The trading update, sorry. I have to take, you know, our stock picks for the evening, so I'll start with you, Trikus.
Okay, it's OMAP or Aeroporto de Centro Norte in Mozambique. I'm not sure even I pronounced that right, but it's short. They just call it OMAP, O-M-A-B. It's also listed in the States. It's one of the major airports. About a decade or so ago, Mexico privatized all the airports. This is the most northern one, I think, close to the industrial and business heartland. There's a lot of business flights coming in, you know, from especially from the U.S. into that area, and the economics and the scalability of an airport is actually very attractive. Once you've built it, you know, you just sit back and there's very little capex that you have to spend to increase earnings over time as traffic picks up. So interesting economics there, and it's I think if trade regionalizes like I've alluded to earlier in the show, if there's a bit of a deglobalization and a regionalization of trade, Mexico US trade will pick up, that's for sure. And a second thing is it's a national inflation edge. So, great economics, compounder, if you can call it that, with little capex needs, and there's an inflation edge.
Yes, and your pick for this evening, JP?
My pick is Admiral Group. It's a short-term insurance business listed in London.
Yes.
They've got a particularly strong position in the motor vehicle insurance market. And the shares are down sharply over the last few months because they indicated that the underwriting profits for the coming year is going to be lower. But that's not surprising because so many people park their cars in their garage rather than driving around because of lockdowns, that short-term insurance made abnormal profits over the last 18 months or so.
Yeah.
And just because that's going to normalize doesn't necessarily mean that there's a problem in the business.
Okay.
And at the same time, short-term insurance always, in companies, always have very high cash balances. You call it the float. And with interest rates rising, it means previously the float did not generate any income for them. And now for the first time, they can actually earn some interest revenue, interest income again from that float, from the cash balances.
Okay.
So I think on the one hand, they might have pressure in the coming year from underwriting profits being lower. On the other, they'll make more profit from the float. And over the long term, They've got a very strong track record of strong underwriting profits and growing their market share in the motor vehicle market. So I think Admiral Group is well placed for the long term.
Okay, so you picking Admiral, the listed company in the LSE, not the asset manager, and you going with OMAV, an operator of airports. Thank you very much, gents. Thanks to my guest, Jean-Pierre Fester from Protea Capital Management and Drikus Kombrink from Capicraft. Stockwatch is back tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.